Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, March 22nd. For today's podcast, we're going to play some amazing listener stories that came in during my live show this morning. And of course, you're always invited to join the live feed from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time at WNYC.org. The call-in was based on the video that Arnold Schwarzenegger released the other day addressing Russian soldiers to try to tell them what kinds of war crimes are really taking place in Ukraine in their name before they have to live with the guilt and shame that Arnold's father had to live with after he was a soldier in the Nazi army and only later learned about the things they had done. So we invited callers to say if they or their family members have ever had an experience like that, and what we got was interesting and moving. We'll pick this up as I'm setting up the Schwarzenegger video clip. Why do we frame this as having people in the generations before you who are on the wrong side of history? Because Arnold Schwarzenegger said this.
When my father arrived in Leningrad, he was all pumped up on the lies of his government. And when he left Leningrad, he was broken, physically and mentally. He lived the rest of his life in pain, pain from a broken back, pain from the shrapnel that always reminded him of these terrible years, and pain from the guilt that he felt. To the Russian soldiers listening to this broadcast, you already know much of the truth that I've been speaking. You have seen it with your own eyes. I don't want you to be broken like my father.
I don't want you Russian soldiers to be broken like my father. See, Arnold Schwarzenegger's father was a soldier for the Nazis. So Schwarzenegger, in his video to the Russian people, talked there about how his father had fought for the Nazis motivated by false Hitler propaganda, and how when he, the father, later learned the truth about the atrocities committed by the German army, Arnold's father lived with the guilt and pain of that for the rest of his life. So Arnold urged the Russian people in the video, this is part of what made it so powerful, not to believe Putin's lies and not to be, quote, broken like his father. And in that little clip from the video that we just played, he was appealing directly to Russian soldiers. I don't know if whatever social media or anything else is going to reach Russian soldiers who are fighting in Ukraine right now or some who are still back in Russia, and whether that might lead them to defect or refuse the orders to fight and commit atrocities like we're seeing in Mariupol and other civilian areas of Ukraine. But now we're going to open up the phones. Does that portion of Schwarzenegger's story resonate with you? Do you have family members who committed wartime atrocities because of propaganda stories? And did a fuller, truer version of history emerge later, after the fighting was done? And if so, how did that person in your family, or maybe it was you, deal with it once you knew more? John in Kiel, Germany. John, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hello.
Hi, John. Hello from New York. Thank you for calling.
Hi, hello. Hi, thank you very much for having me. Great fan of the show. Yeah, as I'm from Germany, Mr. Schwarzenegger's video resonated very much with me. I'm lucky enough to be of a younger generation. I'm 30 years old. My father, who is a bit older, was a child during the Second World War, and he got injured, interestingly, by American pilots, as he told me. But the generation before that, so my grandfather and many uncles and relatives were, and there is no word to other say this in a different way, they were war criminals. I'm sure you know the movie The Downfall, depicting Hitler's last days in the bunker. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where a doctor is in his villa in Berlin and commits suicide by detonating a hand grenade at the dining table. And that doctor is a relative of mine. And there are other people who were, you know, high-ranking officers in the SS. And this wasn't so much discussed in the family. I discovered this more or less on my own. My father is into genealogy, so the documentation is there, but it wasn't really communicated. So gradually, scratching the surface here and there, I discovered, oh, this person was, well, to put it simply, bad. And there's another person who served in the either Wehrmacht or SS, and they were bad. So there are a lot of people in that background. I didn't meet a single person. They all died either during the war or before I was born. Yeah, but to me, the consequence is to be very aware of history and of politics, and to learn and to basically advocate for peace and understanding, whatever that might mean in detail, wherever I can.
So do you think that Germany at the national political level has become sort of a country of Arnold Schwarzenegger's, where there's very much this guilt and shame over what happened in previous generations with the Nazis, and that affects how Germany kind of approaches internal culture or world affairs today?
In general, I would say absolutely yes. I mean, one of the main reasons for Germany's much criticized reluctance to provide the Ukraine with war was the fact that, well, we were a few decades ago the Nazis and attacked many other countries, including Ukraine, so we shouldn't send any weapons. There is a vocal but small minority of right-wing people also here who have this this idea of it's enough now. We shouldn't talk about the Nazis anymore. We shouldn't feel guilty anymore. But that's like 10%. The rest of the majority, as you said, is in the spirit of Mr. Schwarzenegger.
John, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it. And we're going to go next to George in Manhattan. George, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, thank you. This resonates with me. I'm a twice wounded, permanently disabled Vietnam veteran. I quit high school after the 11th grade, joined the Army, and after a year in Germany, I volunteered to go to Vietnam. I was there at 18 and only was there 5 months after having been wounded twice, spent a year in the hospital after that. But my point is, I never saw any atrocities. I, of course, know about My Lai, and I was there in the very beginning of our large engagement there. I do go to the Manhattan VA PTSD group, and some of my colleagues were now septuagenarians, but they were teenagers then, and they talk about regrets that they had. One person, I think, did commit a war crime, what would have been a war crime, and I even talked to the therapist who runs a session and asked if he thought I should do anything about it, even, you know, 50 years later. It's very upsetting. But anyway, we were all affected by it in my generation. And by the way, my maternal great-grandfather ran away from home and enlisted in the 61st New York Volunteers, and he was on the Union side in the Civil War, wounded in the Battle of Petersburg in 1864, and I was wounded in Vietnam in 1965. But anyway, what I'm doing now to try to make some use of this experience is I'm proposing legislation that no one who enlists in the military, or if there's conscription, if they're drafted, should be deployed to combat until at least 21. We can't smoke, we can't buy tobacco, we can't drink, you can't buy a handgun, according to federal law, until 21. But they arm teenagers who we don't know what the hell we're doing at 17 or 18 or 19 or 20. And I can't just use my own experience, but because I knew it was wrong from when I got back from Vietnam. I went to college, I got degrees, and I learned all about how they were lied to, the Pentagon Papers, et cetera. I know you can tell I'm emotional, and it's hard not to be with this subject.
Good.
But I just want to say
it's
that
good for you.
What I'm doing is I'm proposing legislation, as I mentioned, and I'm depending on neuroscience. You see, with the advent of the functional magnetic resonance imaging machine, they can now, neuroscientists can now track the maturation of the brain, dynamic instead of static.
Right. And so how young is too young to send somebody into war armed with the weapons of war based on developmental science? That's such a fascinating question that you ask.
Sarah Jane Blakemore, a professor at Cambridge University, was her book that I read, which documents all his studies and et cetera, that shows that the human brain, whether it, regardless of gender, doesn't complete the frontal cortex, where we do all our executive, higher order thinking, judgment, et cetera, doesn't complete maturation till at least the mid-20s, but I'm proposing 21 as a sort of a political compromise to try to get it through. So I'm right now trying to get...
That's really, really interesting, George, really interesting, and obviously comes from your experience and comes from your good heart. Thank you so much for your call. So far we've gotten calls relevant and along the same lines as Arnold Schwarzenegger talking in his video to the Russian people about his father having fought for the Nazis and then having regrets and it having affected him later in life, urging the Russian soldiers today, be real, see what's really going on, don't let this happen to you, and we're inviting stories of anyone else who's had anything like this in your own life or a relative's life. Let's take a few more calls. Chris in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm related to a fascist dictator from the Dominican Republic. His name was Rafael Trujillo. He ruled the Dominican Republic from 1930 to 1961. He was first cousins with my grandmother. He renamed the capital from Santo Domingo to Ciudad Trujillo. He was a puppet dictator of the United States, which a lot of people might not know, but fascism was a very useful tool by the United States during the Cold War. They installed many fascist dictatorships all over Latin America. You know, I grew up hearing justifications for his actions. He committed a genocide against Haitians and Black Dominicans. And I heard all, you know, I came from an ultra-conservative family. I grew up hearing all sorts of justifications for his actions. And, you know, a lot of people that grew up in my situation with a full ultra-conservative family just grew up and become conservative. But something about me just questioned, are these people really telling the truth? There's something that feels wrong about what I'm being told. And I went down, I guess you could say, the rabbit hole about him and then studying the history of Latin America during the Cold War, all the other dictatorships. Another one that some people might know is Augusto Pinochet in Chile, you know, and all the others. And what it did for me was understand and, you know, the role not just of this ideology and how dangerous it is, but also the role that the United States has taken in destabilizing the global South. And what I do is I am an organizer in my community. I'm an activist. I've written articles that have been published, like in online periodicals. And when it's useful, I don't go around telling everyone this because there are some people I understand it can be shameful. But when it is useful, I tell people about my family history and I show people that you can change. You know, I was a registered Republican until I was 22 years old. And I had, I guess you can call it an awakening. And now I am what you might call a far left or a socialist. And I'm very proud of this change that I made in my life. And it gave me hope that other people can do it.
And you think it came from the gradual realization that you came to about the dictator in the Dominican who your grandmother was related to, and then going down the rabbit hole of history, which you may not have gone down if you hadn't had that personal connection?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was the first seed that was planted.
Uh-huh. What about other people in your family? Like, I don't know if your grandmother is still alive or was at any point still alive to hear how you were evolving?
You know, it was. My grandmother died at 100 years old a few years ago. But, you know, a lot of us, yeah. And she was a great woman other than some of her political views. But us grandkids were very different from her. And we would always, my grandmother was a wonderful, very smart woman. And we would debate her. And before she died, she voted for Obama, which was a shock to all of us. Because for her, that was a huge change. So, you know, she was also a thoughtful person. And she wasn't, you know, sociopathic or hyper-individualistic the way some conservatives might be. Sorry, I have very strong words for conservatives.
I hear. Chris, thank you so much for your call. It's very candid of you to reveal that much. And with some of the history and some of the Latin American history in that call, too. Thank you. All right, we have time for one more. Francesca in Parsippany. You're on WNYC. Hi, Francesca.
Hi. Wow. Okay. Yes. So my name is Francesca. I am an Italian-American. I'm in my 20s. So my grandfather, my nonno, had fought in World War II for the Italians. It didn't really ever register until I had a show-and-tell project in fifth grade where we had to bring in something about our family history. And my parents had, and my grandfather, I should say, passed away before I was born. He died relatively young. I'm not sure if that's connected to his experiences or not. But so the show-and-tell project, my parents gave me, I guess, little, you know, his little ID or his military ID. And, you know, and his, so it had a black and white photo of my grandfather in his army uniform, and it came in a little booklet, and I proudly brought it into class.
Your parents gave you a show and tell item to bring to school from your grandfather from Mussolini's army.
Yes. I don't really know what they were thinking. Maybe they were desperate. Because I had to have something, or they just didn't realize. My dad insists that my grandfather did not see much action. He was, mm-hmm. you know, in some little island in the Mediterranean. So maybe that's why they thought it was okay. But I mean, I would never do this to my own. You know, I don't have children, but in the future, I will be aware of this. So I brought it in for show and tell, and my teacher handled it very well. I mean, I could tell that she was very uncomfortable, and she sort of, you know, shooed me off pretty quickly. But and then that sort of got me thinking about, oh, wait, is this something wrong? Did I do something wrong? And so that's
sort of
got me. Is
that the beginning of your awareness of sort of a bigger picture of that history? Did that spark a curiosity like our previous caller from the Dominican Republic?
Absolutely. It definitely got me more curious. I was hesitant to ask specifically my father, because these were his parents that were apparently fascist. You know, it was hard to talk to my father about his father because he's still, you know, after decades, is still reeling from his pretty sudden death. So I would have to tiptoe around that to mm-hmm. try to get information. And my grandmother died a couple of years ago, and we recovered a book about that, sort of about the history of Siracusa, or was it Siracusa? It was a small, you know, town in Sicily where she grew up. And she had marked up that book very proudly. She put stars next to, you know, any mention of the fascists. And so until, you know, so long after the war, she still seemed to be very interested or happy with the fascists and bringing glory to Italy and
wow.
things like that. Yeah, it's pretty uncomfortable.
Did you hear the Schwarzenegger video over the last few days, and did that spark further reactions in you?
I heard parts of it. I didn't hear the whole thing. But I definitely, you know, it definitely makes me very it does connect. It really does. And I spent a semester abroad studying in Italy. I'd never gone there before. And sort of just being able to, you know, I tried to uncover or look for specifically, you know, museums and artifacts for Italy's role in World War II. I mean, you know, Mussolini was the original fascist, you know, and then Hitler sort of understood that idea and he ran with it with Nazism. So, you know, it's, and I think part of, you know, the trauma of, you know, maybe being unable to deal with, you know, Italy's recent, you know, history with this atrocity. And I laugh, but that's just because of, I really don't know how else to respond. It's either that or crying. I think that maybe this also connects to a lack of awareness or maybe an overemphasis in Italian pride or Italian American pride in, you know, on our side of the, you know, in United States with, you know, the importance of Columbus. Yes. And, you know, just right. Italian, you know, Italian Heritage
right.
Day. And I think
that sense, I always think mm-hmm. it's weird that Italian heritage gets so lumped in with Columbus as an individual.
Yeah.
But that's another show that we'll probably do again in October.
Yes, exactly.
Francesca, thank you. And I get it about your laugh. You know, different kinds of laughter can convey all kinds of emotions. So don't worry about that. I think that was clear. Thank you for your call. We really appreciate it.
I'm a big fan. Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.